back. WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It says so right on the screen. Calm, local, even on these heated days when we're cooling off. And you were doing a whole segment about food here momentarily, but I'm going to tell you about the best ice cream in the land, and that is Taharka. It's made right here in Baltimore. I got the peanut butter ice cream with the mini peanut butter cups mixed in. Don Mulder, that's why it's gone. That's why it's empty, because that's what it had in here. I got to get some refill on our Taharka ice cream. They are doing incredible things with social change here in Baltimore. We got a great story ahead. Before I do that, I'm talking all food here. I want to talk about the shrimp and grits. I want to talk about the chicken and waffles and those delicious salads that I get at State Fair. But across the street, El Guapo opening soon. I think he's opening it for me. He knows how much I love chips and guacamole. Evan Brown is going to be joining us this week here on Baltimore Positive, talking about his newest Mexican endeavor opening later in the month in Catonsville. Don and I will be lined up there for the guacamole, the chips, and hopefully a very, very special 100% agave margarita with my friend Evan Brown. We'll be doing that. Also this month, Fadley's joining us here. Damien Hahn will be on with us later this month talking about the crabbing industry and where your crab cakes are coming from, and maybe they're coming from Indonesia. Who knows? We want them coming from Maryland. We are Baltimore Positive. We want you to ship your crab cakes from Fadley's. You can go to Fadley's.com, ship them, buy them, curbside them, and you want to be a real hero. Ship them to somebody you like here for the 4th of July weekend as I wear my red, white, and blue. And if you're learning how to crack a crab the appropriate way, Don Mulder taught me how to do that a year ago on Facebook, and that video is getting all viral right now. Mulder and Gary Realty still buying, selling homes, listing homes, doing it from 6 feet away, doing it with a mask on, and doing it at an incredible level. You can find them at Mulder and Gary Realty. Don Mulder, we started Baltimore Positive mainly because Donald Trump became president, and the city kind of lost its way, and we had all these things. We said, we're going to find great, great stories. And this one, you know, is right up our alley because it involves food, it involves doing the right thing, it involves community endeavors, it involves cooking for people in need. I want to thank our friends at KO for recommending this piece because this is right where we want to be in Baltimore Positive. The Franciscan Center is a ministry of the Sisters of the St. Francis of Assisi. They operate here in Baltimore, and Don, you found this piece, so I want you to at least do a little bit of intro on this, because my dear friend Rick Mace at the Washington Post wrote about this, but when I said Baltimore Positive to you 2 years ago, this is exactly the kind of story we were talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are good people each and every day doing great things in Baltimore. Actually, good people who may even at one point in time had a rough patch in their lives, didn't let it get them down. Said, you know, hey, I got knocked down, but I'm going to get back up and I'm going to contribute to society. And our next guest is certainly a wonderful example of that. So we are pleased to welcome, and we love food, so we're always pleased to welcome chefs to our show, Chef Stephen Albright from the Franciscan Center. Chef, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
What did you cook today? What was for breakfast today? Lunch, dinner. What did chefs make?
Yeah, for today, for lunch, we're actually doing a baked tilapia today. We did some roasted vegetables, root vegetables, and beets with goat cheese.
Wow, man.
Let's stop there for a minute.
I don't eat beets, but my wife would love it.
We don't have to go much further because one of the unique things, Steph, about what you've done and what you've made a commitment to there at the Franciscan Center is to really change the concept, and I want you to talk about this, of what institutional food is. I mean, over the past year, I'm looking at some of the stats. I mean, you serve 100,000 meals a year. I mean, that's incredible. So talk to me about what motivated you to say, look, man, we're not just going to have, you know, slop on a plate.
Beans and rice.
Just because you're coming and you need some help and you don't have a hot meal, we're not just going to throw some food at you. We're going to actually throw some cuisine your way. Talk about that journey, Chef.
Yeah, so I got here last October, and Jeff Griffin, our executive director, had been looking for someone to come in and change the way we fed and change the direction of the kitchen. And, you know, I got here and I took a look at what we did, and Jeff said, Steve, it's yours. Go ahead and run with it. So, the first thing I did was really, I got rid of the sugar drink. So it didn't make me very popular with most of our clients and guests, but I started serving water almost immediately. And then I looked at our donations and food donations and what we were doing. And I said, we're going to start creating food. We're going to start cooking food. We had this great farm out in Ellicott City. It's the Shrine of St. Anthony. And we were getting a lot of fresh produce from there, as well as from some of our other food partners like Whole Foods and Costco's and so forth. So we just started to create food. I mean, the idea of serving just casseroles didn't appeal to me at all. And I thought, and I actually had to get my team to buy in on this because, you know, it's easy to come in and to reheat everything. It's a little bit more challenging now when you have to come in and start to create things, put flavors together, start to mix things. And so they, you know, they bought in, the team bought in, and we started cooking meals. And then healthier meals, also we decided recently to come up with a thing called Dignity Plates. So part of our slogan at this Franciscan Standard is serving with dignity. And we came up with a little web page called Dignity Plates, and that's how we like to present the food. And it's something that I asked our volunteers and I asked my staff. I said, listen, we're going to make this great food. We have to make it look nice on a plate. And that's the way we present it. Even in these days where we're doing to-go boxes, we still plate it with dignity and plate it really nice so people get a, because we all eat with our eyes. I mean, if you see something that looks appealing, you're going to want to taste it. Even if you're not sure what quinoa is or wheat bulgur or couscous, you know, and a lot of our clients have never been introduced to these type of foods.
Well, I want to talk about the Franciscan Center. First off, just location-wise, right near the Otto Bar, right near Clavel here in Baltimore. My dear friend Rick Mace, who I once climbed to the top of the Great Wall of China with, it's a long story, involved Cal Ripken about 12 years ago, wrote a piece in the Washington Post, and it came to our attention. The mission of the Franciscan Center is to provide emergency assistance and supportive outreach to persons who are economically disadvantaged in an effort to assist them in realizing their self-worth and dignity as people of God. Chef Stephen Albright not only creates the food for everyone at the Franciscan Center right here in Baltimore, but was once incarcerated and became a chef. And I guess this is where the story becomes interesting. I see sharing dignity at home in Baltimore for 50 years. I was born in 1968, so I have an appreciation for anything that says 1968 on it. But your journey over the last decade and a half to becoming this guy that cooks food for people in need. Your struggle, and I'll allow you to tell your story about incarceration and finding chefs like Emeril Lagasse on television to where we are here in the middle of a pandemic and you're serving people and no longer incarcerated.
Yeah, I tell you. So my story is, you know, I was a military guy, spent 8 years in the Navy, but I always struggled with alcohol and substance abuse. And, that got in the way of every good thing that I had been doing my entire life. I found myself in a situation at 44. I got into a domestic assault and I ended up getting sentenced to prison. You know, I would say back then I was so arrogant because, you know, I made a lot of money and I didn't think I wasn't those, that kind of, addict that would rob from people. I just used my own money because I made so much money. Nevertheless, the arrogance soon faded once they shut that door on me and said, all right, you're going to go away for 10 years. While I'm incarcerated, I used to do a little cooking in the microwave, and I started watching shows on Maryland Public Television, which food shows. I watched everything from Emeril to John Besh to Julia Childs, and I just got so, I was so caught up in it because during my younger years, I used to spend a lot of time in kitchens, but not cooking, working security as I walked through the kitchens with different types of diplomats and stuff like that. But got really, really focused on it and said, you know what? After I get out of jail, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go cook. And I had plans to go back to New Jersey, where I'm from, but ended up having to stay here in Baltimore. And a friend of mine, good friend who's still dear today, said, grow where you planted. And didn't really understand what that meant, but I said, okay, grow where you planted. And I picked Stratford University because it was a culinary school in Baltimore. So Baltimore is my new adopted home, and why not go to school in Baltimore? And there I went, and I spent my first 18 months in culinary school, and I worked. It was a bit of a challenge. So I don't want anyone to think that it's easy. I mean,
well, yeah. Well, let's back up for a second, because you're incarcerated, and you decided to do this. Tell me about your years of incarceration in regard to, because we talk so much here with criminologists and police people, and obviously all this in the news to say, all right, we incarcerate people. What are we doing the day they get out of jail? What is the resource they have the day they walk out of prison? Because this is where the nightmare begins for a cycle of poverty and murders and crime and all of these things that really are a plague to our urban environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to tell you, though, you know, it's interesting and it's different for each person. I mean, I wish a lot of returning citizens or guys like me in a situation, you know, the day I went to prison was the first day I was thinking about getting out of prison and how was I going to do that and how was I going to change things about me to make me a better person. A couple things was, one, you know, I took advantage of every class that was possible, whether it been domestic violence or thinking for change or conflict resolution, and I got involved in programming, you know. Prison is an ugly place. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's ugly. There are people, a lot of people that I've met in prison that I firmly believe belong there forever. And there's some people that I believe that can make a change. And it's simply like the guy, like, you know, I look at guys like me that have made the change and are out here thriving today, because I'm not the only one. There's several, but I took a lot of programs. I got involved with the right people. I also found some spirituality, in which at first I was, I practiced Buddhism while I was incarcerated. And it gave me a clearer way of thinking, and you know, which has led me now to, I'm Catholic now. I converted about a year and a half ago to Catholicism. You know, during that time, I needed it. If you take advantage and you pause and you think and you say, what am I going to do different? I mean, here I am, in my 40s, in prison with a lot of kids around me. And saying, wow, I'm too old for the gang. I'm not going to spend the rest of my life here. I realize that. So taking programs, getting involved, and then having a plan. I mean, work a plan. So when you're getting ready to be released, if you haven't worked on these things during your incarceration, it's an eye opener. Because
do they even ask you if you have a plan when they give you the key? You know, when they let you out, like, what is the procedure of that?
Yeah, so when I was getting released in 2014, you had to have a plan, an exit strategy. You know, where are you going to go? Where are you going to live? What were you going to do? So when I was at pre-release, so fortunately, as you step down, so I started at a medium two facility, which was on the Eastern Shore, which is one below max. And then I went to a pre-release, and then ultimately a work release facility here in Baltimore. So I was at the Baltimore pre-release unit on Greenmount, which no longer exists. It's no longer there, but they built a new youth facility there. So while I was there, there was an opportunity for me to go out to work. And I applied for a position at, believe it or not, P.F. Chang's in Towson. And the chef there, young guy, took a shot and hired me. So I thought I was going to do dishes. But he put me right in the kitchen, and I was working in the pantry, like, you know, my eyes as big as, you know, like a deer with headlights, and saying, what am I going to do? And he said, I'll teach you. And he started grooming me along almost a year before I got released. So that was the best part of this, making the transition into culinary school. But yeah, so getting released, it's tough. You have to have a plan, an exit plan. So I'm not from Baltimore. I didn't have family here. So I went to a transitional home. In Baltimore. I spent about 2 months there, and then I was able to find an apartment and move into my apartment. Enrolled in culinary school right immediately there, and that's what I did. So in 2014, from February 21st, I was enrolled in culinary school on March 17th, less than a month after I was released from prison. So I stayed busy and stayed focused. Worked, went to school, went to sleep.
Well, I mean, you could cook anywhere, right? I mean, you could have a job at P.F. Chang's or, you know, any restaurant. This particular opportunity of sort of giving back, right? Like, and seeing a little bit of maybe yourself in others and finding a way. Tell me about your pathway to Franciscan.
So, the pathway to Franciscan, I had I had met Jeff, our executive director, a few years back when I was working with Father Leo Paddlinghug at the Table Foundation. And we came over to do a couple of cooking demonstrations. And then Jeff was involved in what we call the Olive Mass. And I heard his story, and I was like really, really moved by his story. And I said, you know what? That's a guy I want to work for. And my dear friend also told me, he goes, if you ever get a chance to work at the Franciscan Center, that's where you got to go. So a lot of things happened about, you know, with spirituality along the way. And, you know, it's just a part of my story. So the day I was released from prison, February 21st, the church I went and got confirmed was the foundation was set, February 21st, 1864, St. Francis Xavier. My confirmation name is Maximilian. So Maximilian Kolbe is the patron saint of prisoners and addicts, which I am both. So Franciscan, and he was also a Franciscan priest. So I said to myself, you know what? It makes sense. So as my transition here, so when Jeff called me and said, hey, do you think you'd be interested? And it was kind of I was torn a little bit because I was working at a nice place in Annapolis called the Lighthouse, which is a shelter where we work with, you know, people that are in transition. And I was teaching a culinary training program, and Jeff said, listen, we can do anything you want. Just, you know, and that's an offer you can't refuse. I, you know, have my own program. And so, it made sense to make the move. And on October 7th of last year, I made the decision to come to the Franciscan Center. And I see all the things you said, Nestor, like seeing myself out there in some of these clients, those that struggle with addiction, those that are incarcerated or formerly incarcerated, mental health issues. I mean, these are people like me because it is me. And I think a lot of us struggled with things, or a lot of us still struggle with things. I mean, I have a great therapist who I use still, you know, twice a month at the VA. And it's just an opportunity. And I believe this is a calling. So if you work here at the Franciscan Center, or at least for me, I was led here and called here to do this type of work. And food, well, you know, food is life. Food is everything. So,
there are so many stories involved in this. Again, we're with Chef Stephen Albright, the Franciscan Center, inspirational story. I'm thinking as our listeners are driving around in their cars or sitting at their computers at home, there's not a family out there that is not touched or have been touched by substance abuse.
Absolutely.
So I look at your personal story. You run afoul of the law, domestic abuse, by your own admission, you're a substance abuser, you're an alcoholic, mm-hmm. in 2007, and you stop. You have been alcohol-free now for 13 years.
Yes. It's a miracle.
it sounds like a miracle to me, to be honest. So talk to our listeners about how that happened. At what moment did you say, you look in the mirror and you say, Steve, you're a drunk, stop it. And then how did you make that happen?
So what happened was I had been introduced to the fellowships, the 12-step programs, several years earlier, but never really grasped all of it. Said, that wasn't me, that wasn't me, that wasn't me. And you hear all the I nevers, like, you know, the three things that the fellowship tells you, jails, institutions, and death. So I had been to several treatment facilities, so institutionalized. Now I'm sitting in jail, and I'm saying to myself, well, listen, there's only one thing left. And at 44, I wasn't ready to just call it a day and say, that's it, you know. So I started going to meetings, started listening, you know, stop talking and listening, become teachable, and listen to those in front of me that had been successfully recovering. I hate to say that jails is a place that you, or prison, I should say. You can find anything you want in prison, just like you can do on a street. It's just avoiding those pitfalls. And if you are focused enough to say, you know what, I want a better way of living. And, you know, fortunately they have 12-step programs in prison. So I attended both fellowships. And, again, I started working with a therapist in prison who was really honest with me. And I surrounded myself with people that thought like me, that wanted to recover. When I got released, I found a great sponsor. Unfortunately, he passed away last year. And he had like 36 years sober. And a guy, and, you know, so, but.
Now, was that a moment of, you know, Steve, I'm just so fascinated by this topic. Was that moment when your sponsor passed away that you had put so much faith and trust in, was that a moment of crisis for you?
Actually, you know what? It could have been, but the interesting thing when I went to visit him in the hospital and we knew he wasn't going to make it, I had enough support around me from my therapist to my sponsees, the people I sponsored, to my sponsee brothers and sisters, that, you know, we could all lean up on one another. And we, you know, we talked about it. There wasn't a day we didn't talk about it. And, you know, it's been a challenge for me. So now it's a little bit over a year he's gone. I still haven't found a new sponsor yet, but I stay close to my home group, obviously. I stay close to people in the program. And
now you get to be a sponsor, right?
Yeah. So I actually sponsor two people right now. So it's good. Look, you know, you see yourself in them and they're young and recovery and so forth. And you laugh and you say, okay, you know, try not to do this. Or I try not to give advice. I just try to talk about myself and what I did and what I didn't do. And everyone wants to, you know, everyone learns at their own pace. And, when it's enough pain and you're motivated to change, you change. And I believe that, you know, so, I mean, I'm truly blessed. I believe that my higher power, or God as I call him, has really gave me purpose in what I'm supposed to do. And it's just, again, by listening to what's around you and not always like having the answer, you know, it's a miracle, you know.
Well,
13
it's
years, May 29th. Yeah, May 29th was 13 years for me.
So yeah, remarkable story, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, 13. Congratulations, first of all, on that.
Thank you.
Congratulations. You're exactly the kind of person we want to feature on Baltimore Positive. Jump back for a minute to the daily operation of the food operation there at the Franciscan Center, because I was struck as I was reading about it that you've had to feed many, many more people over the past 4 or 5 months than you have in the past. I think you're now feeding thousands a day. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, so some days are higher than others. And so what has happened? So last year, the center in 2019, we fed about 131,000 people.
Wow.
So during this COVID experience, right now, I looked at the numbers, we're about 165,000 right now in 15 weeks.
Wow.
So, and we do that in a variety of ways. So we realized, back in March 13th, Friday the 13th, and we could forget that day, you know, my director called me and said, hey, listen, what are we going to do? You know, this stuff is coming down. You know, we're not sure what it is. And so I said, no problem. We're going to come. We started making sandwiches that weekend. And then on Monday, March 16th, is when we went into full COVID operation. So basically, we changed our whole way of method of operating. Normally, we were having anywhere from 400 to 550 people come in the building a day to feed. And they were coming from all over, all different. Now we had to change our mode of operation to outgoing. So, we started with one of the community centers over in West Baltimore, Matthew Henson Community Center. And we started giving sandwiches because they had gotten left off the, you know, where meals could be dropped off and so forth. And we started sending sandwiches out there, feeding at the door sandwiches. But it's funny because I had planned this huge St. Patty's Day meal. We ordered corned beef. We're going to do corned beef and cabbage. And I looked at Jeff and he says, what are you going to do for St. Patty's? I said, we're serving corned beef and cabbage. Are you kidding me? And we cooked corned beef and cabbage because it was a Tuesday. So we were open, for our meal during the day. And then we also do dinner on Tuesday and Wednesday night. So we served corned beef and cabbage all day. It was an amazing St. Patty's Day in the middle of this crazy, in the beginning of this crazy crisis. It was pretty good. I was really impressed. I was really happy it came out well. My mom would have been proud of me.
Jeff, you got to walk us through. I mean, I wish we were together, because I know Nestor's head is spinning, because I'm trying to get my head around what does it look like making that many meals. How many people does it take? Peel the curtain back for our listeners.
So,
I'm blown away by this.
We actually had a little competition going in the kitchen. So I have three cooks down there, and my lead cook, Brenda, is so funny. So we were on a sandwich making day. So, you know, some of us are working on the meals for the door. Other ones are making sandwiches. So Brenda was by herself, and she challenged us. She made 660 sandwiches one day, and it was about over a 7-hour period. She was just in there making sandwiches. So that was the bar. She set that bar. And then the next day, everyone said, okay, I'm going to do more. And then we had a little competition going, but no one could beat Brenda. I mean, we actually then started getting some volunteers in to start making sandwiches. So we were doing, like, the first week making about 2,000 sandwiches a week. And the first couple of weeks, it was like that. And then we started getting the calls from a lot of different we got some calls from city agencies. We got some calls from different partners. Hey, can you help us out? So we also have a pantry bag system. So the pantry bags are bags that we build that are meals for three people for 3 days, three meals for three people for 3 days. So we started building our pantry bag system, which was non-existent. We would do maybe 30 a month. We're doing now 400 a week.
Wow.
Mm. So we're sending all those meals out. We're also doing to-go meals at the door. Plus, we're sending out sandwiches and stuff to the people as well, to a lot of senior centers. So right now, I think we have, what, 5 or 6 senior centers we're servicing, a church, a low-income housing place. So, yeah, every day, I mean, when you start adding up the meals, it's thousands of meals going out of the building a day.
We are chatting with Chef Stephen Albright. You can find him at the Franciscan Center. I want to tell you a little bit more about what they do there. You can learn all that they do at fcbmore.org. Serving the needy with respect and dignity there in downtown Baltimore. And the chef was incarcerated for a number of years. He came out and is now cooking meals for tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people during the middle of this incredible pandemic. Hey, look, when things get better, Moeller and I will come there and mix up some sauce.
Please.
And elbow up with
Please.
You.
Yes, sir.
You know, maybe run around the corner and get some tacos at Clavel together, something like that. And
exactly.
See what we can do. We really appreciate your work and your efforts. And
Thank
as
you.
Don has pointed out, I mean, a year and a half ago, we've talked to so many different people in different walks of life here. But this is sort of right in the target area of the kinds of things we want to talk about. And Don, one thing on the way out the door, I can't help but be up the Franciscan Center site here and see the Franciscan Center in the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg building. I know you and I and Matt Gallagher, so many people have talked about foundations and how all of this works. We're talking about these things that put food literally in the mouths of people, and there are people out there like the chef that create that food that feeds these people.
In the midst of the ugliness in this nation right now, Nestor, mm-hmm. these are the points of light. These are the programs that make us a better society.
We appreciate you and appreciate everything Stratford did and P.F. Chang's, anybody else has supported you along the line, so you're supporting
Thank
other
you.
People today. Chef, take care of yourself. Make some sandwiches
Thank
for
you.
Everybody, all right?
I will. Thanks, guys.
Keep the beets right, away from me, but my wife thinks it's wonderful, man.
All right.
Mix me a rutabaga in there or something like that. Hey, we got to thank all of our sponsors. We speak about things. I've become very fond of the pistachio ice cream at DeHarkus. I want to give pistachios a – when they say chock full of ground roasted pistachios, they mean chock full of it. DeHarkus is doing great things in Baltimore. They use their award-winning ice cream to serve up social change. Each scoop inspires cultural understanding, community engagement, economic empowerment, and, of course – good times and great ice cream. Learn more at the Harka Brothers, made here in Baltimore. Shout out to State Fair. Our friends at Fadley ship those crab cakes. We're going to have both Evan Brown and Dami Hahn on Baltimore Positive this month and this week as we get ready for the 4th of July. Moeller and Gary Realty can get your home sold as well. Find them at MoellerandGary.com. I am Nestor. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, we are WNST.net AM 1570. Come local. And always, Baltimore Positive.